All right, I will call us to order as we do our budget work session with conservation. Welcome. Thanks for putting together a really, really good first swipe of the budget. And what we'll do, if it's okay with you guys, is we'll just go through, start with revenues, and if we have any questions, we'll talk about those, move on to expenses, and work our way through that section of the budget. So starting with revenues, and I'm on page 71 right now, my first question is, talk to me about what's in miscellaneous. Clearly that's something that has jumped around a little bit. Already we're way ahead of what we had budgeted in there for this year, and so I'm just curious as to what our expectations are.
It's basically just odds and ends, cash and dividends, reimbursement, maybe things that got spent in different fiscal year that are reimbursed. So
the second one,
$2,000, and then if something unexpected happens, that number will change.
Sure, but it looks to me like every year that we've got on here, we've had more than 2,000, and usually substantially more. We've already brought in $4,144 into that category this year, and Lisa, it looks like you've only upped that to 4,000 for this year. We need to at least up it to the 41, but probably more than that for this year. And then I'm just questioning whether we want to go to 3,000 or 4,000 as our budget for next year.
Reason we went from 2,000 to proposing 3,000 this year is we did start a new program. We got $1,000 that we didn't budget for haying. And so we contracted out some haying this year, and we plan to do it again next year. So that's the additional $1,000.
And we also had some proceeds from equipment we took to a DOT auction. That was $1,600.
So there's $1,600 that maybe we can't count on, but I look at FY12, and we had $6,800 come in that category. Year before that, it was $3,700. Year before that, it was $2,400. And so I'm just debating whether that and it's not a big deal. I mean, it's a $1.5 million budget, and we're talking about $1,000. But still, I like to try to have these things as close as we can get it. As close as we can get it.
I think we'd be okay with 3 or 4, but I don't know if I would want to go much above that.
Well,
in 2012, we had a high reimbursement for Law Enforcement Academy, reimbursement from one of the staff, so that inflated.
Okay.
Well, let's put it at 4 then, as long as you're comfortable with that. And then, for me, anything else on that page from either of you guys? Because then I'm on page 72 is my next question. And
you were okay with on page, let's see, land rent, no questions about that.
No.
That's coming down because we're taking Dakin's out.
Yeah, I knew right. You were taking right. some out. It looked to me like that was just a multiplication. You just multiplied what we're going to be renting out and what we're getting for it.
Mr. Chair, let me make it just kind of a qualifying statement. As liaison to the board on the and as a non-voting member of the Conservation Board, I've had the pleasure and privilege of going through the budget process with the board as they put this together. So I'm very familiar with the discussion that took place at the board level and with Mike in justifying what he was requesting and why these were important needs. And so as I flip over to the supervisor's role and so forth, I again would echo what you've said. I commend them for, presenting a budget based on needs and recognizing that, we're trying to save taxpayers' dollars in every way we can. So I don't have a lot to add in here, but as we've always done collectively as a board of supervisors, if we see areas that we'd like to see amended or changed, I'm certainly willing to support those views, even though we did have these discussions at the board level with the Conservation Board.
Thanks, Wayne. Yeah, I agree with you. It's a really well put together budget, and I'm appreciative. I just believe that it's our role to
right.
understand it
exactly.
And make sure we have the conversations. And so that leads me to my second question, which is the next last line on 72, and that's fuel tax refunds. It's more about this year. Why is there $6,700 coming in right there?
That was a receipt that was miscoded, that belonged in land rent, but it got put in fuel tax refunds. And I just talked to Jane.
So it's not really in there. Okay, perfect. That was all. It wasn't even a question about what you got presented for this year. It was the 67 didn't make any sense to me.
Right.
And that... That was all I had on the revenue side, unless you guys have any other questions. And like I say, it was more just clarifying for me. Okay, so, Mike, anything you want to add on the revenue side?
No, I think that's fine.
Okay.
It does, I guess one thing on, let's see, on your page 71 down at the bottom, camping fees, just so you understand that,
yep.
116,210. That includes 2 months of operation at Dakin's.
Yeah, so that's something that if Dakin's doesn't get completed in time, clearly that'll roll back out.
Right.
But I appreciate...
Right.
Good.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. All right. Anything else on revenues? Okay, going to expenditures, and if it's okay with you, we'll hold discussion about the position until the end. Alyssa, that works for you?
Mm-hmm.
We'll hold discussion of the position at the end and just run through this without considering the new position to start with. So my first question is Conservation Board. Again, a small number. We budget $1,500 in there. That looks to me to be swag, just as you provide food and mileage and things like that for the Conservation Board. It doesn't appear to me that you're truly going to approach the $1,500, but I don't know what you think.
I think last year we had $1,200.
Yep.
FY12 actual was $12.
Yep. You're at $526 so far for this year.
Mike, a comment on this. Sometimes that would also depend on the number of board members who decide to go and attend some of the annual conferences. Not in previous years, that number varies a little bit. One year we had three board members went to a meeting with the director, and then previous years it's been maybe one member. So that will probably make a little bit of a difference, if I'm not mistaken. Is that correct, Jolene? Yeah.
And this year we only had, two board members that went to the fall conference. It's nice to have the funding there available if more want to go.
Okay, let's just leave it where it is. I just wanted to ask, since it looked to me like last year we didn't come anywhere close, and this year we weren't halfway there yet. So, but leaving it alone makes sense to me. Talk to me about environmental education supplies, educational supplies.
Last year we had budgeted $15,000. Let me find the right line on.
Yep, we've used 44% to date that I can see.
Yep. Yeah, most of the expenses haven't come out yet for this fiscal year.
Okay.
They'll come in the spring as we get ready to do camp season.
So you think the $15,000 for this year is a good hard number, and then that justifies going up to $16,000?
Well, what we're adding to it, I think the 15 is a good number, and I don't see changing that. However, we're adding a new program that this year was funded through our partners project or
okay.
Partners program.
Yep, that's the cell self-guided.
The on cell.
Uh-huh. Yep.
And that's 14, so in change. So that 14. 30 creates the 16,430.
Okay, and that's the service we like. Is it being utilized?
Well, we're just getting it started. Yeah,
right.
We haven't had it on the ground yet.
You guys have any questions on page 75?
Does everyone know what that is?
You would just give us.
It's essentially self-guided interpretation. So self-guided education about various things that in our facilities. There'll be a sign There'll be a sign of specific spots in our park, so they'll say, you know, this is an on-sale site, call this phone number, and you'll get a little message that talks about this site. So we'll use it for unique features, for programs that we're doing, for those kinds of things. Right now, we're starting at Hertz and providing some of the history of that site, which is something we worked with the family in developing that. So it'll be used in the future at different sites for different interpretation purposes. But everyone carries a phone, and there's cell phone access everywhere, and this is a great way to get some education out there about our sites.
Like those audio tours at museums, except you use your own phone.
Use your own phone, yep.
Well, please keep us updated on how that goes.
I'm
curious to hear about the usage of that. So my next one is on page 76, recreation supplies. I don't understand how we budgeted $2,250 this year. And it looks to me like you got $1,000 built in there for Dakin's Lake supplies, which I understand. But can remind me how we got to $2,250 last year?
$2,250, $2,000 of that was for food at Hickory Grove at the beach.
Okay.
And $250 of that is for campground supplies. Primarily, it's printing receipts.
But we got that at $2,000 this year. The printing of receipts.
We need to print. We need to do another print run. We're out of receipts.
So this is one we'll spend this year, and then we won't have to spend it again for a while.
Right. Essentially, we spent that $2,000 in FY12. You see the FY12 actuals are a little higher.
Yep.
On supplies, so on that subcategory, we spent just shy of $2,400 in FY12.
So it's an every other year kind of thing that this is going to.
Yeah, FY13 we didn't think we'd do it, and we need to next year.
Yep. All right. Next line down, uniforms and equipment. Like you'd go through a lot of that for me, but specifically the tough books.
Yep.
Portion.
Sure. Let's see, tough books, 9,100. We have the tough books now, secondhand from Sheriff's Department. And so the 9,100 is the, if you will, the miscellaneous hardware and software to operate those. What this would do is put one of those tough books or laptop in every Ranger vehicle, and so Rangers would have access to running driving records and things that they would normally call into dispatch. They could do over the laptop, so there'd be less communication with dispatch in that regard. Has GPS tracking ability so the dispatch knows where our Rangers are, for one. And all of the reporting. Now, you're probably familiar, the sheriff's office isn't doing hard paper reporting. It's all electronic. This would provide that for us. Right now, we're not on that system with the sheriff's office, so this would give us the capability to get on that.
And then is there any ongoing cost getting on that?
Air fees.
Okay. Airtime
fees, and that's reflected a little later in the budget.
Okay.
And so basically, this is not really going to be a pilot with one or two. I mean, you're talking about three different vehicles. So obviously, this is
right
where you want to go with that.
Okay. So that 9,100 is really one time fees.
Okay.
One time startup for
okay.
The recurring is the air fee that comes a little later.
Really, you have to. I think they have to do this. Really, if you're, because the sheriff's going, everything's going to be electronic and it's all tied to EDMS and.
We're not compatible with
right,
their
if you're,
system.
If you're
right
doing
now.
paper reports, I mean, you're doing them for yourself.
And we have to have you know, deputies right now or someone with the sheriff's office help our rangers when they get over there, log in for them, and they essentially use their account, file things, and it's not very effective or efficient right now.
Yep. And bulletproof vest and tasers, that's a need?
Vest, that's on a regular replacement schedule.
Okay.
So, yes, that's something we need to do. Tasers, we don't have those right now. That's a new option for the Rangers. You know, right now our use of force continuum, if you will, goes from an ASP up to sidearm. And we don't have anything in between there, really. I've used chemicals, so we do have pepper spray, and we've used that occasionally. I think that these tasers would really, particularly in a park setting where you don't, you know, most of the time you don't need and don't want that heavy, you know, that, you know, heavy enforcement. This provides a really good option for the Rangers. So,
regular training to carry those?
Would have to be certified, correct. One of the things with spray is, which is the closest option we have to a taser. Oftentimes, you know, rangers might get that spray on themselves inadvertently. Also, if you tase someone, you can redo it if necessary in the course of your action. Whereas a spray, it lasts longer, I think it's harder on the victim.
I think the discussion that maybe Lucy was looking at when she asked the question about the training. Again, I think based on, you know, our history of recent. You know, this would be, if approved, this would be an area that we would want to make absolutely certain that the officers were well trained and understood, you know, the ramifications of when it would be considered appropriate use and not, et cetera. And I think that's just part of the ongoing training that I think, because of the potential county liabilities that would exist in the event that it was determined that it was improperly used. Okay.
My next question is on contract labor, unless you guys have something before that. Contract labor, and it looks like the big jump is in the Conservation Corps. Obviously, we've got some Dakin's Lake stuff built in there, but if you could just talk us through all of that.
A couple things, yeah. Contract labor, FY13, 14, the budget was 14,760. FY14, we were looking at 4,920. Difference there is really three categories. First, you mentioned, Rick, already, campground attendant at Dakin's Lake, 2,160. That's a prorated amount to have a host there for the first 2 months of the season. Second item is Conservation Corps crew for 12 days. We've been using the Conservation Corps now for, I don't know, several years. And we've been getting grant funds to do specific projects. So we've used Conservation Corps at Robeson Wildlife Area for restoration work there, savanna reclamation, prairie reclamation, etc. We've used them at Jeanette very successfully. We've used them at the Prairie Overview area on I-35, again, very successfully. All of those grant funded, and we anticipate that we'll continue to get some grant funding for specific projects. this wouldn't do away with that. The Conservation Corps is a youth program. Young adult program, 18 to 25. And that program trains people in the spring. They sign on for a year. Essentially, it's an arm of AmeriCorps. And So very energetic folks. They're very capable, and the real cost to us is about, it's less than $5 an hour. So it's very cost effective in that regard. I think we're getting a good bang for the buck when we can hire them to do some of this natural resource work. So the idea with this $14,000 is to hire them to do work primarily at Dakin's. So a lot of the area, if you're familiar with the area between the existing lake and the parcel that we'll be buying, is grown up mostly in honeysuckle and is really thick. We need to clear that out, provide some sight lines, enhance the new campground, et cetera, down to the existing lake. And so this will help accomplish that.
Okay.
That's the rationale here. Next one is the an addition of $10,000, and that's for preliminary planning for a recreational trails plan. Now, if we want to work with planning and development, and I don't know what your discussion with them on a capital improvement plan has been, but that's certainly a potential there as well.
Yeah, you answered the question for me on the Conservation Corps, and I appreciate that. And I like any time we can get big bang for our buck on work that we're going to need to do. And that sounds like there at Dakin's is something that's going to have to be done, whether we do it this way or we hire it out somewhere else, and it rolls into the cost. The trails plan, the $10,000 there, I'm not sure we're to the point that we're ready to commit $10,000 to that until unless we create this capital improvements plan. And so I'd just get your initial reaction there if I said that $10,000 I'm hesitant on.
I mean, I think it makes sense to coordinate that with a capital improvement plan. Our plates are fairly full right now with Dakin's, and mm-hmm. so it wouldn't break my heart to say we're going to push that back a year or however. Let's wait and see how the capital improvement plan fleshes out.
That's what I'm going to suggest to these guys, is that we pull that $10,000. We ask you to just hold off on that, and let's coordinate through that capital improvement plan, and then if we need to come back and allocate some dollars to it, then I think it makes sense.
Makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Paul, you good with that? All right. So that's all right. We'll scratch that 10. And then again, my final, and this will come as no shock to you, I wouldn't think, my final question is on, it's under other capital projects, building and equipment, and it is assessing and implementing energy efficiencies for $50,000 at McFarland Park.
Well, we had a fair amount of discussion about this at the Conservation Board. We have an aged HVAC system. Roughly, it'd take $80,000 to replace that whole HVAC system. A few years ago, we did an analysis of a geothermal system, and that was to the tune of roughly $250,000 to do that. We know we're on borrowed time with our system right now, and so we budgeted in FY13 $20,000 in the event that we need to replace a furnace or replace something with the system. We haven't used it yet. We originally went to the Conservation Board and put a geothermal system in the budget as a way to have this discussion. What's the board's pleasure on how we move forward? Geothermal system in the long run, probably more cost effective than replacing the existing system. However, the discussion at the board was that, hey, we know we're going to have this need come up. So we know we're going to have to deal it up. We also know that the building probably isn't the most energy efficient as it could be. And so if we do a geothermal system now, are we really throwing a little bit of money away because we're not realizing all the efficiencies the geothermal system can bring until we get the building up to date with efficiencies? Does that make sense?
Okay. Yep.
So that was the thought, yep. And that, so the geothermal, you know, $250,000 got changed down to the $50,000 with the idea that we need to do some building upgrades, i.e. windows, and really do an assessment to see what we need to do to the building prior to spending money on the geothermal system. And also, again, if we need to do something with the existing system in the interim, then there's some funding available for it.
And part of this, Rick, was in my analysis at that time was sort of like a reserve designated fund, knowing that the current heating system is on borrowed time. And we've been fortunate in a lot of ways, but at the same time, we didn't want to have to come back to the board and say, wow, all of a sudden now we're going to have to spend a huge sum toward that. And if there was a way to have some funds designated for particularly that purpose. And I think a year ago, the board, with Mike's suggestion, we did start with the windows and made some improvement in that, in the main area there. And I think there are probably other areas that, you know, that they probably need to take a look at, but that was part of the my thought process at the time, except that we didn't believe, I didn't believe that it, the Conservation Board was the avenue to say that they could reserve it, designated it. I think it had to be something that maybe came through us initially. So I think this is a way to lessen the blow. If we can get by another year, great. But I think in the meantime, you do want to start looking at some other energy efficiency cost savings to the building itself. And this would be some of the funds available for that. So I don't know what you need, what your thoughts are.
Yeah, I think I agree with all of that, except when we know we're operating on borrowed time with this HVAC system, we know it's not a question of if, it's a question of when. Then it seems to me, while I applaud and I support the idea of spending dollars on energy efficiency right now, our primary focus right now has to be getting ready to replace that HVAC system and identifying, while I'm a huge believer in the geothermal and with conservation, it makes perfect sense. If it's not cost effective, if we don't see a good payback over a 7 or 10 year period on that, then I'm going to have a hard time with us investing in that. We need to make that decision. We need to identify really what it's going to cost us. And then, to me, it makes perfect sense to be putting dollars away to do that. But spending dollars right now on really laudable purposes like energy-efficient window and stuff like that, we're spending money that we need to be holding on to replace the guts of the thing. Because I don't care how energy-efficient it is, if we don't have heat out there, it's not going to be very pleasant.
Yeah, I guess, but part of and I'm agreeing with you 100%. But if you recall, when we went to this building and put in the geothermal systems, what made it successful and made our payback come was all the other energy efficiency things that were done at the same time along in that process. So whether it's sooner or later, if we decide to go that route, we're going to need to upgrade, you know, those things. So it's just a matter of when we would want to do this. This idea was to maybe certainly look at things that we know would be cost effective down the road, but I can understand where you're coming from, too. If and when that point comes, we're just going to have a larger capital outlay sum.
Yeah, I'm just worried about where down the road it hits and how much money we have put away and what our flexibility to go find dollars to do it is going to be.
I would like to take a
look. How much do we know where we're at?
Spend some time and compare the geothermal to the system we put in at Community Life. That was the two options. And the main option, I think, I think Al he's a proponent of geothermal, but I think the biggest problem there was the lack of space.
Right, you had to drill vertically or something.
And he did say that that's a good alternative. And I would for us, I would like to know. I mean, we've had that system in place for I'd like to get a report on where we're at with that and see how that compares to a geothermal.
Yeah. Because I think Al came out of that being a bigger fan than he thought he was going to.
That's
kind of a modular system. Right. And I don't know how familiar you are with what we did with that. But it's worth it at least looking into, since we know that we're going to have to do something at McFarland sooner probably rather than later.
And when I did talk to Al about this, you know, he said that depending on your energy costs, if you've got high energy costs, then geothermal makes sense, of course. If you're already at a fairly efficient system, then the payback is, you know, not there necessarily.
Right.
So this system, we had analysis of the Conservation Center system done, I think, in 07, 09, somewhere in there. And at that time, they projected a payback of anywhere from 14 to 12 years. So now, you know, boiler or furnace efficiencies have gone up in that amount of time also. So, I mean, I think we really need to base our decision off what we've learned thus far with CLP.
Yeah, I think we need to look at CLP, because I look at the way you guys utilize, or the way I understand you utilize McFarland, and there's opportunity where there's areas that aren't getting used, they're getting used heavily, and so being prepared to heat or cool those things as needed, to me, would be a real advantage over what we did with CLP, and I would sure be interested in getting the cost differential and starting to gear. I don't think I'm debating the $50,000. I think what I'm debating with you is, okay, what is that $50,000 for? Is it so that we start to build a fund so that we're prepared to replace the HVAC system, or is it so that we can go do some energy efficiency things still knowing that we're going to have to replace the HVAC? So I don't know if you guys see it a whole lot differently than that.
I don't. I mean, for me, I would sooner put that $50,000 towards a new system.
Yes.
And if you identify efficiencies that you need to make after the fact,
concurrently, right?
Right. I mean, that way, you know, hopefully sooner than later, we'll be prepared to put a new system in there for you.
Okay, but the question then comes right back to, if we're not going to do it this FY, theoretically, we're designating that for that purpose. And, you know, so, I mean, how, and you're holding off on making some of the other energy efficiency improvements currently. But part of it is again, whether there is going to be funds set aside, you know, and moving forward. I guess in the long run, I think it's the future for us is going to be more predictable if we are able to move forward and replace that furnace in the very near future than it is to continue and up along. I mean, I just think we've been very fortunate up to this point.
I think I agree with that. Lisa, are we able to take a $50,000 like this in the line item and just put it in a fund that we're designating for replacement of that HVAC? Can we create something like that?
I mean, it's designated funds, so I would list it as designated funds, and that's what it's for.
And just, yeah, keep track of where it is. And then I would ask in the meantime if we could just get Cal at this point to do some legwork on what a CLP-type system in McFarland Park would look like, and compare that to geothermal, and just see. Then at least we know what we're talking about.
Exactly.
There's probably a possibility that you'll have to pay some engineering costs. I mean, if you're going to actually have somebody come in and look at it.
Yep.
Because that's what.
Well, that's true too. But and Mike may just comment on the. We looked at wind turbines as an example, and when everything was all said and done, the report came back to us that it was going to be far more costly than what we could do by going in a different route to go in that.
Right. That's what I actually
thought this 50 was
when I first saw it.
Right.
And it's what led me to the question.
Right.
But
Now, we didn't have to make any financial commitment at that point in time the way that was set up, but I'm almost sure we did pay something up for the study, the energy study, to the company that put in the, I don't know whether they call it a tram system, whatever it was, but it was, in CLP. So I know there will be a cost,
It might be such that, go back to the folks that did this study in 07. I think they revised numbers in 09 maybe, but this study is looking at it from 07. So it might be going back to them and updating with modern efficiencies and thermal systems.
And this, I can't think of what it's called, but this system that we put into CLP. So there'd be three options. There's a traditional, there's a geothermal, and there's this system that we put, this modular system that we put into CLP that I think would be good options for us to consider. Take them one step backwards. The $116,000 for sewer replacement at Hickory Grove Park, that's one of those that we're doing over several years.
Yeah. Again, we don't have the money. That $116,000 won't cover it.
Okay.
We know we've got to do something different with the sewer. We set aside $25,000 in FY13 or $26,000 in FY13. Our estimate on this, and it's a fairly, let's see, if I remember what the year on that estimate is. That might be a 2010 estimate. The cheapest alternative and the recommended alternative for the sewer system at Hickory was to connect it to the Colo system, which means piping it out to Twin Anchors. Cost price tag on that at the time was $230, $240, $250, somewhere right in there. So last year we said, this is the next thing we need to check off the list at Hickory is to get this sewer system addressed because we can't add to the load right now with the current system.
What are we?
It's a lagoon.
That's a lagoon. Okay.
The original lagoon. And we know we need to get this addressed. So the 116 would be the next installment. And if you will, if you remember, that is the camping revenue. So 116 is all of the camping revenue for FY14. And the request that you see here is to put that toward the sewer project. So if you remember right, I don't know how many years it's been now, this board has given approval to use that camping revenue for
two capital years.
Projects
yep.
and for land acquisition. We've used it for the Dakins acquisition. This year we're using it for, in FY13, we're using it for some upgrades at the conservation center, the restrooms. We're also using it for waterline repair at Hickory Grove. And then the $25,000 that would be pigeonholed for sewer at Hickory.
Okay. That helps me. I didn't have a major question on it. I just wanted you to address it. That was all I had.
Where are we at with those water lines at Hickory Grove? I mean, I know we really got hosed on that one. No pun
intended.
wasn't the county attorney looking into that?
Yes.
And
what the attorneys are telling us, we have to realize that damage, which we haven't fully realized yet, before we have any course of action, any grounds for a course of action with the company. So $47,000 is what we had budgeted this in FY13 to address the water line problem. We're scheduled to do that in the spring, so we haven't done it yet. Once we pay for that, and we all hope that it's going to be far below that amount, then we'll have some grounds to go back to the company with, here's our damages.
Okay. We've got a Dakins Lake, we got a couple of employee issues to talk about, right? Alyssa? We have for conservation.
FTE for Dakin's. The other portion is there were a few that needed to be brought up to the minimum beginning in there, and that's been included.
That's included in what we got here.
Right.
Yeah, and I think Mike put it in there, too. He had asked for that amount. So.
But there's not a new ranger position?
Not a ranger.
No,
it's a park ranger assistant.
Park assistant.
Okay. And when are we expecting this? If everything goes like we want it to go with Dakin's, when are we expecting the need to fill that position?
I would like to fill that position in January, so 6 months into the year.
Okay.
Give some time for that person to get their feet on the ground, get some training done, and be ready to roll in May when the campground opens. So that's my, you know, that's my request and for the timeline. Everything has been, all of the Dakin's operations, including the staff, is prorated to the operation period. Early on when we started talking about Dakin's, you know, we said, well, you know, we'd like to do it. It's a great project, and I won't, you know, you guys are all familiar with that. But it's also going to have a price tag for O&M, operations and maintenance. So it's going to have a general fund need. Looking back on that a little bit, or looking at revenue, I think you guys have all seen, you know, revenue impact or economic impact projections somewhere around, you know, depending on how you slice the apple or what, who you listen to, somewhere around $750,000 annually in impact.
Or more.
Or could be substantially more. So then when you look at direct revenue, and I looked at that with the campground based on, you know, different occupancy levels of the campground. 100% occupancy level with no cabins, which is what we're designing right now, is $115,000 annual. That's 100% occupancy. Hickory Grove, we're at 55% occupancy. And so, you know, 60% occupancy at Dakin's would be $68,000, just shy of $70,000. The money, the revenue that we budgeted in FY14 for camping was the $19,000, and that was 50% occupancy. You know, realistically, we'll be somewhere between 50 and 120. I mean, 116 some odd thousand annually into the revenue. So, we also had to look at the expense side, of course, and that's what you're seeing here. The expense side of that is if you look at just on an annual basis, not what's reflected in FY14. If you look at it on an annual basis, we're at somewhere there in the neighborhood of $65,000 to $70,000 to operate. That's broke down to, you already saw it some in the budget, operating expenses, you know, gravel, chemicals, mowing, all of those kinds of normal operating, picnic tables, all of those
sheep.
Kinds of things.
I do away with the mowing.
Goats. There you go.
Goats.
There you go. But with that also is I broke down all of the staffing needs. So, i.e., how many acres of grass do we have, and how are we going to get that cut? How many fire rings we have cleaned out, and how are we going to do that, et cetera, et cetera. What is the need on for the campground host? What is the need for rule enforcement or law enforcement there as well? So I have all that broke down. Of course, you know, zeroing, we don't have any shops located near there, and so there's a fair amount of travel time associated with that as well. Now we'll try to minimize that with equipment and such, but
don't sell Rick Good short. Yeah, right, I'm telling you right now, you can fix probably just about it. If you can bust it, I think he can fix it.
He can fix it, and the lawn mowing. You know what they do there in Zeering? They've got a group of about eight of them that get together on their riding lawnmower, you know, the nice, probably
right.
Similar to what you have, nice riding lawnmowers, and they'll go out, they'll take care of all city property and anything abandoned, and they just make a party out of it. It's like
Hell's Angels or the Blue Angels, or it depends on if you want to say it nicely or not. I mean, they're in formation and they're going and knocking this stuff out. And they've already mentioned that depending on what liability issues look like and everything, they would love a crack at doing Dakins for cost.
Right. This reflects us doing it, but I know that's an option.
Right.
Are they going to mow on the bias? Because that looks really nice.
Like a ball field?
Yeah.
We've also, with Dakins, I mean, if you look at the design, we've tried to design it such we're going to do the planting such that we don't have that much turf.
Right.
We'd like to do more in natives. That does a lot of things. A, it reduces on your maintenance costs, but then B, it also hopefully is going to mitigate or lessen the impact of geese, frankly. The more turf you have down to water level, the more problems you're going to have with geese. We know that. Quite familiar with that from hickory. So anyway, we've taken all that into account. We're trying to minimize what's necessary at Dakins for maintenance. However, there is maintenance. We know that. When we break it down, you see in the analysis here, requesting one FTE. Well, Dakins, between rule enforcement and skill set for our full-time help, that's a one-half FTE need. I need 20 hours a week, or actually a little more than 20 hours a week, annualized out at Dakins. So it's shy of the 40 hours a week that you're seeing here. My rationale for that change... One is we have, since 2001, gained approximately 500 acres in management. In 2001, our staffing level was at 8.5 FTEs. Let me grab my sheet so I don't misquote you. Okay. In 2001, we had 8.5 FTEs in our field operations. And now we have 7. And we have added just shy of, actually, 592 acres that we've added to our management, that we've added to our ownership. However, I need to qualify some of that, because some of that is owned by us but managed by DNR, i.e. Colo Bogs. So that's 142 of that 600. And so there's some of that that we don't have. We have the ownership, but we don't have the day-to-day management. So you need to qualify that number. But in the end, it's a substantial amount more acreage, and in essence, less staff. In 2001, we switched. Since we had 8.5, we eliminated a half-time position and then shifted a ranger position, a unit ranger position, into a special projects position. That's Carol's job. That was that shift. And so she was field-based, and then she really became more some field, but more office. And thank goodness we have that position now for what we're doing. So essentially, what I'm asking you guys to do is consider increasing the field staff by one position, half of that being justified by Dakins, the additional work there for full-time staff, and the other half being justified by the accumulation of our management authority. And what I would pretend or propose to staff that, how I would propose to staff it, is with what I would call a ranger assistant. And that's a hybrid between the current conservation technician position and a park ranger position. So it's someone that someone that essentially is a conservation technician but also does rule enforcement. Not a ILEA certified position, just rule enforcement in our areas. So no ILEA training or like I said, certification. We do have the authority to do that and have someone perform that without going through ILEA. And so I think that that does a number of things. It fits exactly the bill that we need at Dakin's, where we need that additional oversight for rule enforcement with the campground. We're still going to have a draw on our rangers where it goes beyond rule enforcement into citation or, you know, whatever other tracks it might need to go. But it's going to address that kind of day-to-day need for campground oversight and maintenance. So those two things.
Well, I think the timing of this person coming on board is a good rationale that you have put forth. And there's no question in my mind that if we're to fully utilize the potential for the Dakin's area, having an on-site presence there would certainly enhance everything that we do. And I you didn't mention it, but the near future for conservation is that we hope to expand the land ownership. We are working with a lot of landowners, farmers, etc., to set aside land for us. So I think management is going to become really a key resource that we're going to want to move forward with in the near future. So the question really is when is appropriate to add the person. I think the justification for the work level is certainly there, and even if a person was on board sooner, there is still enough duties and responsibilities that a person could do. But I think when we look at it in terms of where most of their time is going to be spent, then I think it would be reasonable to assume that it would occur at about the time we thought that the Dakin's property would be open, which would be in the spring of 14.
Yeah. Alyssa, what's your assessment?
On the position, actually, I worked with Mike last week to finalize this job description, score it out, and get a good understanding. At first, I was concerned it was going to be too close to a park ranger. But after discussing it, it is closer to a conservation tech with the rule enforcement job duties. As far as timing, it would probably be dependent on when Dakin's was done. And I don't know if right now if you have a definite date or does it depend. I haven't been involved in all the Dakin's, so I don't know. Exactly. That I do agree with the training. You need to have at least a couple months before they go live with the actual work for training. That is part of it. Other than that, there are some unknowns, you know, with the need as far as Dakin's, and it might turn into more of a need. And you just don't know at this time.
And Alyssa, correct me if I think we've graded it out at a 7 with that job description. Techs are at a 6, and rangers are at a 9. So it is definitely closer to the tech side than the rangers.
Job description's a lot like a tech. If you look at it, it's got a lot of the same essential functions except for that rule enforcement.
Mike, my question would be, is 60 days prior to the expected opening of Dakin's enough time for this position to come in and get acclimated, looking more at a March 1st start date rather than a January 1st start date? And, you know, I know it's 2 months, but it's 2 months.
It's kind of like a placeholder, isn't it?
I mean, it is a placeholder, depending on what we see. I'm debating whether the January 1st, if we were to authorize this position January 1st, is the right time, or just do it for the last third of the year.
So, theoretically, again, all based on the only thing we can base it on right now is our projections for opening Dakin's, which is May 1.
Which I can't see a way that it's going to happen prior to May 1. Even if it's done, we're not going to open prior to May 1. So I'm saying that May 1 is a good target for us, because we know it's not going to happen sooner than that.
And so are you suggesting to bring this person on 60 days prior to May 1, so February, March 1?
I got that as March 1.
March 1.
Yeah, let them work March and April, getting acclimated, getting, and then they're ready. Because as I said, okay, you've got it, what, prorated out as half of their time is being spent at Dakin's, but the reality is for 4 months a year, they're going to spend all their time at Dakin's. Right, I mean,
it's going to get annualized out. I mean, it's going to get averaged.
Right. It's going to get averaged, but I'm saying summertime is when they're going to spend a majority of their time at Dakin's, and then wintertime they're going to spend a majority of their time doing other things.
Right.
What do you use as far as when you hire a conservation tech? How long do you consider their training period?
I mean, typically 3 months is the training, but. You know, can we make it work with two? It's going to be a lot for someone to pick up, but depending on how we're able to fill it, who we're able to get, sometimes that goes really quick, and sometimes it takes longer.
Well, the other thing I'm looking at, Mike, and you can help me with this if I'm wrong, that first year we have Dakin's open, you're going to throw more resources than just this one position at it anyway, regardless of who's in the position.
Right.
Absolutely.
Right.
We have to get it, to get it up and running.
Right.
No, we have to, certainly. So, and it kind of, let's see, you know, I would anticipate a lot of the applicants for this, a lot would be college students, upcoming graduates, if we hold off. However, it's going to be some real problems if we tried to hold off for college graduates
right.
That year.
Yeah.
Working.
And I do view this a little bit, you could have a lot of internal, this is a... It does pay more than the conservation tax. Kind of has the same.
And if we get an internal applicant that's successful, obviously our training need goes way down.
Right.
And we just have to focus on the rule enforcement. So if we have an internal applicant, yeah, I won't blink at all. 2 months, absolutely. We can do that.
Well, how about if we do this? How about if we approve or deny the position based on a March 1st start date, and then as we get further into 2013 and we see what's really happened with Dakin's, we can come back and have the conversation again about wiggling that 1 month or the other in a direction. But just as we do this budget, would that be all right? Okay.
I'm good. I mean, we knew going in we weren't going to spend $2.5 or $3 million up there and expect it to run itself.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Even with the Blue Angels.
Exactly.
Well, those guys come with a price attached, too, not just what it costs you to have them done. Alyssa, anything else you want to add?
I don't think so.
Okay. All right. Feelings on the addition of the position?
I think we need to go.
Okay. Lisa, I'd ask that you go ahead and plug that into this budget, but plug it in with that March 1st start date attached to it.
I'll get you the minimum salary.
Thanks.
Yep.
Let's see. Did we have anything IT-related that we need to talk about? Hey, I didn't notice a good goose dog in this budget, Mike. I think you guys need to budget.
Have you seen the price on those things?
That's like $10,000 for a good goose dog.
Yeah, for a year it's like $70,000.
My point is, you want to own, you don't want to hire it out.
Right.
But I think that's what you need. You need a good goose dog that just goes to work every day.
Other campers all have a permit to carry anyway by now, so
I think everybody does, don't they? Lucy, how you doing on yours?
One 127, there were numerous items that I asterisked or questioned, said, talk to Mike.
127, you say?
Yeah.
All right, so we are now in the IT budget.
Okay. You'll have to ask away. Pardon me. I don't have that in front of me. So
we got a tablet computer for environmental education programs.
Right.
$500.
Yep. And that is really so that, if you will, gives our naturalists some more opportunity to and more training opportunities in the field. So one of the ways that this is used quite a bit is field guides. So they'll be able to, in the field, you know, punch up and do. There's ISU, actually, university has some a really good tree field guide that's very effective, and it's a dichotomous tree, dichotomous key, if you will. So it's either yes or no, answer all these questions. It leads you right down to the species. It's things like that that would be used in the field by our educators. So,
computer and monitor for a new workstation at Hickory Grove.
That is with the new position.
So this new position will be based out of.
Probably, yeah, we'll probably base them out of Hickory. We have room at Hickory. Hickory right now is the shop that oversees Dakin's. So yeah.
It's the closest, isn't it? To.
I think it is. Look. A little bit closer than McFarland.
Okay. Laptop for office. Current laptop cannot be upgraded.
It's one we use for board meetings and presentations.
Okay, so my question would be, as we start out, as we get through FY14, would that secondary, that laptop that you currently use, be suitable to get us through the 3 months that we have our new position at Hickory Grove? Is it serviceable enough to do what we need to do for those first 3 months?
There's a software issues on that.
It's not upgraded to Windows 7.
What is this new position going to need? I'm trying to picture how much time they're going to be spending on a computer anyway.
You know, it's basically it's going to be your word processing. Yeah, word processing, email, maybe some spreadsheets here and there. But
yeah, and my suggestion is that this old laptop that we would be replacing right here could be suitable for that first 3 month period, and then. Well, see, that's different. Yeah.
Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays.
Yeah, that's it. If it won't turn on, that's different.
Is it end in Y?
If I traded out my monitor for this new docking station, it would work out okay.
You need one more thing to carry around.
And then a laptop for a natural resource specialist.
Yep. And this this would be one that computer essentially that they could keep with them in the field. Enter in burn data, chemical application data, all kinds of resource management information that this would enable them to do outside of the office.
Place in a desktop. So you're getting rid of the workstation and having a docking station?
They have a this position has a desktop right now.
This is an addition. It's a more in the field
however,
operations.
We certainly have that. Very good point. We may be able to, if we get a laptop, then change the desktop over to the.
So we can do away with the one with a new computer and monitor, new workstation for Hickory Grove, because you're going to replace that with the one for the resource specialist that now is going to have a laptop that can have a docking station.
Right.
Because here's what we do. Here's what the IT situation is. You either get a desktop or a laptop with the docking station.
Don't get both.
Licensing.
No, I mean, I think that makes sense. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so the one we scratched through are the four things you guys had. We're scratching through computer and monitor for the new workstation at Hickory Grove in 2014.
Right.
Okay, and you're going to just make it work with the rest of them as you move those things around.
Sounds good.
Let's see. Vehicles. We had just had a conversation with the engineer about the potential of a truck with a snowplow on it.
Yeah.
Single axle?
Yes.
Single axle.
Darren needed a new shop truck. We took the old facilities truck, which is a 3/4-ton Ford with a snowplow on it, and gave it to them.
In great shape.
In great shape. It's 10 or 12 years old, got 100, give or take, 1,000 miles. Right. Well, he really needs a long box with a Tommy lift on the back for grader tires if he has to move maintainer tires.
Oil barrels.
So, do you have any need for that? Because we probably won't get much resale value out of it if it's a trade. But it's a, I don't know what year it is, 99 or 2000.
I wrote it down earlier.
Is it a four-wheel drive?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's the one that they use here.
It's a 3/4-ton short bed.
Yeah, it's extended cab with probably a 6.5-foot box with a snowplow on it. And I don't know how that works if it goes to conservation, if they actually have to buy it from us or if we...
Well, I would suggest there needs to be, just to keep Darren whole, because he could trade it in for something.
Whatever. But, yeah.
He should keep him whole on whatever that trade value would be, but it may be an opportunity for you, if you're in need of a vehicle, to pick a good one up at a really reasonable tag out of your budget.
I would think it would be very serviceable coming from Al's department, because he kept them in pretty good shape. They got regular maintenance. And
yeah. I mean, the other option is if you got one that's on its last legs, we take that and use it as the trade-in for Darren, and you replace it with this one.
I thought he said it was like 12 years old, 120,000 miles thereabouts on it.
2001.
Yeah,
in really good shape, yeah.
Gas engine.
Gas.
And you can go take a look at it. It should be.
But I did mention to him that was something that he ought to engage in conversation with you about, and to see if that would be an option to look at rather than trying to use it as a trade-in on something else.
Right. Ideally, we'd have more vehicles available in the summer to use than we have in the winter. Because we have more staff in the summer and more need to get out to more facilities, so we always have, we're always going to have that need for additional vehicles. Well, we'll consider that, certainly.
Yeah, just take a look at it. It's not anything you got to do. Just if we can find a way to make it all work,
yeah.
I'd rather hang on to the ones that are well taken care of and have a few more years of life in them.
Right.
I didn't see you trading out. You have a new vehicle for the new.
Excuse me?
I didn't see any vehicles you were going to trade out except the new. Didn't you have a new pickup in there for the new?
For the new position, yes, because we're out of vehicles.
So,
we had put that in there. We can take a look at
this. Yeah, just take a look at it. Other questions for conservation before we move on to Quaker?
Mr. Quaker.
Mr. Commissioner.
Wayne, you need a break before we go to Quaker?
We're ready.
All right. Flip the page.
Okay.
You can do the talk.
My big question here is drainage district. I know we're not serving in our capacity as trustees right now, but as supervisors, we kind of put this program together. I know we've had some bumps in the road as we've gotten up and going. I just circled the $62,000 that we've got budgeted to come in, and I say, can we really get there? I mean, is it reasonable with that one position that we've allocated to this to get to the $62,000 and work for drainage districts?
And, Joe and I have chatted about this quite a bit.
Every day.
It's a system we put into place last year and new program for us. And I know even when we did that last year, we had, lots of different what ifs on how it could transpire. And I think what we've really found is one of the what-ifs that we didn't budget for. We thought we could get that. We thought we could make it a cost-neutral program.
Which was the mandate that we set for it, is it needed
right,
to be a cost-neutral.
Right. The budget that you see in front of you reflects it as a cost-neutral program.
Right.
When we chatted about this at the Conservation Board, I told them that we were going to do a year-end review. So we haven't had that much time under our belts with this project. And the more time we get under our belt with it, the more educated answers we can come up with for how we're moving forward. So we did that year-end review, and Joe did that with Tyler. And Tyler's had the opportunity, been on long enough. He's been out there and got assessments done. One of our thoughts going into the inception of this program was the condition of the ditches, and are they in such that we, county staff, can realize that full 62,000, 65,000 in revenue. We thought we could. Now, with some time under our belts, we think we're in a different situation, and that's a very good question. I don't think that staff can realize $60,000 in revenue. The ditches, and Joe can, you know, add some details here. The open ditches are for the most part beyond what we can effectively do with staff to address them in their entirety. So I don't think that we can realize that 60-some thousand in revenue. I think what's going to be necessary is some larger scale logging or clearing operations, some larger equipment. We can do some of that in-house, certainly. And there are instances where we can do it in-house maybe more cost-effectively than the private sector, and there are instances, the majority of the instances, where the private sector can do it more cost-effectively than us. So does that answer your question? That
kind of.
In essence, I think that $60,000 is high.
Unless we start taking on some of the projects ourselves, which may or may not be cost-effective.
Correct. Correct.
You're going to be taking away time from other things.
And
it's going to probably take more than just one person to be able to tackle some of those things.
Yeah, that's the thing. You know, we have one person in the position, and, you know, frankly, when any time a chainsaw is being operated, we need two people. And we've been able to fill some of that need with seasonal help. But that's been really hit and miss for us so far this fall. But anytime we have a chainsaw, we need two people. And then if we were to, you know, throw Joe and his time at this also with Tyler, so throw two full-time people at tree clearing, we could accomplish more. But we're also taken away a little bit from what we can do with roadsides. And I think you've already had your work session with the engineers and know kind of their different business plan now with, you know, what they'd like to do with maintaining ditches and doing clean outs and that kind of thing, which is frankly a situation that we really weren't prepared for this summer and this spring that we realized. So with the more work that they get done, the more time it takes, you know, IRVM roadside staff. And if we try to, and so it's, you know, it's this or that. And if we try to realize the $60,000, then maybe we're not getting something done over here with roadsides. Does that make sense?
It does, except that when we conceived of this position, when we hired this position, our thought was, okay, roughly 2,000 hours in a year, our thought was, okay, if we spend the 2,000 hours doing work on drainage districts, we're going to be able to bill out more than the cost of that position back to the drainage districts. I still view that the same way. What I'm hearing now is it's not reasonable to have one person do the 2,000 billable hours, but maybe it is reasonable to have a couple people get to the 2,000 billable hours. Then on the flip side, on the weed side, you say, okay, you're taking somebody out of doing the weed commissioner kind of services for X number of hours that they're working on the drainage districts, but you're also picking up now a full-time position to work on those things during time. So my question is it possible for the IRVM responsibilities and the drainage district responsibilities to dovetail nicely enough that sometimes we're working on drainage districts and we're throwing everything at that and billing for it, and sometimes we're working on roadsides and we're throwing everything at that, getting it done in half the time because we got double the manpower or more manpower to get it done. Is that a reasonable way to maybe approach this? I think it's clear to me that our original concept of throwing one person at this and they were going to be exclusively drainage districts isn't going to work like we wanted it to work. So the question is, how are we revamping that?
And, you know, the reason, and you know, I'm behind the eight ball on this timing-wise. Frankly, I wish I had all those answers for you prepared today. I don't. What I do know is there is some capacity there. There is some capacity to share. And I guess I'd like to, Joe and I have chatted about that. We, you know, I think there is some room for combining, if you will, combining workforces and being able to get some more things done. Can we still realize that 62,000 when we do that, though, is a question. Even if we have combined...
Well, I would say, can you realize it two ways? One, can you realize the 62 on the revenue side, or can you reduce things like extra help on the expense line side by pulling that person
right.
So that it's, again, we're looking for a net zero kind of thing, all said and done. And so I think there's multiple ways to get there. And so I don't intend to put you behind the eight ball right here. So what I would ask is that once we finish our conversation today, we get a callback scheduled with you guys as soon as we can that gives you time to get out and take a look at this, however ultimately you two come down on where this needs to be headed, and you come back and we talk about it again, if that works for you guys.
That works, yeah.
All right. So then, that takes care of my one revenue question that I had. Do you guys have anything else on revenue of IRVM?
No.
And we'll just run through this since we know we're going to call them back. We'll run through this real quick and then get them out of here so that we can worry about the callback. I'm concerned about the seed. And I'm going to tell you what, I'm on expenses now. I'm on page 86. I'm concerned about the cost of seed. It was $2,000 last year, knowing that another six was handled by the engineer. Well, now, as I understand it, that six that the engineer had has been shifted over into this budget. So that means that this two should, in fact, be going to eight, as I see it. Plus, the engineer added two more back in. So now we're ahead of the game by two on what he wanted to do. Plus, we've more than doubled that $8,000 here in the seat. So if you could talk me through that.
Yeah, and Joe knows these numbers inside
yeah.
out.
Yeah,
so.
Shit. I need bifocals, so I'm going to put my glasses up. They're ready. I just haven't picked them up yet. Seed.
Seed, it's most of the way down. Yep, most of the way down on page 86.
Our projects have doubled, if not more. As you know, with the engineers' workload, they're doing a great job out there getting things done
yep.
on the infrastructure. You didn't mention mulch. I'm going to try to go through this, and I don't know what Darren budgeted for on his side, but what we talked about was the $6,000 mulch and tackifier that was previously budgeted through the engineer's line item in road clearing. We decided, hey, why don't you take that,
yep.
Quaker?
And he said that.
Okay.
That's exactly what he said,
so that's
$6,000.
At this point, except we have 80 acres to work with, and it's kind of spelled out. I don't know if you have it, but we have 80 acres of roadsides to plant. if you got your pen sharp, I figured 15 acres I can do in-house. 20 acres we're just going to buy from Des Moines Forage and Turf or the best seed dealer out there for brome and cool season. 25 acres of natives, that's the 7,500 that I need to purchase at $300 an acre, which is pretty cheap for prairie stuff per acre. And then obviously the $6,000 that goes back into our budget for mulch, and you know what mulch is? It's the green stuff we blow out of the hydro seeder. The tackifier is the glue that goes with it. And then we always budget for a little bit of cover crop and stabilizer seed. That would be oats, annual rye, grain rye, stuff like that that grows like a chia pet real quick.
And so what I'm going to need to understand is it looked to me like last year in these items, regardless of whose budget it was coming out of, we had budgeted $8,000 total.
Out of IRBM?
No, we had budgeted $2,000 out of IRBM and then $6,000 out of engineer. We had budgeted $8,000 total, and now we're coming back, and as we sit here today, we've got $19,500 budgeted in that same line item. And I appreciate that engineer, no, plus the $2,000 that Darren put in his budget.
For seed? He
yep.
put in an extra
He
two
put in $2,000 for seed in his.
Put in extra two for seed.
Gotcha.
Yep.
Yeah.
So just comparing apples to apples, same two lines in two different budgets. Last year was $8,000. This year it's $19,500. While I appreciate that we're doing more work, we're not doing that much more work. And so I just want to have it all make sense for me.
Well, all I know is 80 acres. Rick, and that is
where did
that
number
that's
come
much
from? Where
more
did
work.
80? Where did 80 come from? Is that a number that we just think that's what we're going to have to do, or
we have a really good system of documenting and GPSing our roadside work?
Okay,
and so far I averaged over 20 years about 40 to 50 acres.
Okay,
this year is going to be 70, and they project just as much, if not much road clearing in their five-year plan. So 80 acres is what Todd, Darren, Mike, and I sat down during this budget process
right.
and said, what do you want? What are you guys going to get done?
Okay.
They go, 80 acres.
This is 80 acres of ditch, basically 80 acres of ditch cleaning. They're gonna
yeah.
do.
Yep.
As opposed to?
40 or 50.
50 in the past.
Correct. There was one year I did 70 acres back in the early 2000s after the flood.
Okay.
Otherwise, this 80 acres covers our bare ground.
Would it be fair to assume the following year that this wouldn't be substantially lower? Or do you anticipate that need is continuing to grow?
Correct. A lot of it does depend on the weather. And, Wayne, you know, we may not hit 80 acres this year. I'm not going to buy all the seed all at once. We may get a late spring snow, and we're not going to be able to get in the roadside. But
yeah, I think the only thing I would ask on this, Joe, I think you made a great case for why this thing is double over the 8,000, getting to the 80 acres. But I need you guys to visit with Darren and figure out that extra 2,000 and where that's coming from. And then I just need to see, again, it's double. But this is more than double, and so we need to get that figured out. To me, if you told me right now, yes, between us and the engineer, we're going to be spending between $16,000 and $17,000 in seed next year, okay, you know what? You've shown me the ground that we're doing, and it makes sense to me. It's getting from, you know, to $17,500 and then ultimately to $19,500 that I'm struggling with. And I really don't care whose budget it's in.
Yeah, and we didn't. I guess we weren't aware of the 2,000. So we'll definitely, if we can take 2,000 off of
maybe
this,
that
great.
Is in anticipation that you're doing something else, maybe, and his guys are doing it.
Yeah, he did kind of mention that.
Yeah, just see how many of those 80 acres he's expecting his guys to handle.
Right.
With that 2,000, it may make perfect sense.
It's good you guys caught this because I would assume that my whatever. 17,500 would purchase their seed, whether I'm doing it or they're doing it.
Yeah,
he's got 2,000.
Just check with him before you guys come back in here, and let's get to the bottom of that. And just, you know, well, you've done a great job pointing out the acres and what it costs. Just sharpen the pencil down and see if you can get it closer to 16 total that we're spending. That's the only thing I had. Anything else? Does anything else kick out?
talk about this one equipment tractor. Is this primarily because more of the drainage type cleanouts? Where how is that different than a say a flatbed or a truck that would haul some equipment? Just kind of walk me through that.
Thanks, Wayne. Well, we the IRM program is operated with the two original Massey Fergusons that Paul probably rode on and mowed shoulders with back in the 70s. I don't know, but they've done a great job for us. But they are nearing their end of what I can even make parts for. So this particular power source is not a Cadillac by any means. We did price out the options that we would need to use in the roadsides for a tractor, and the one thing I like on it, it's a cab. If you know anything about working out there and the bees and the bugs and the 100-degree heat, it's sure nice to have someone inside a cab on these things anyway. So that is the tractor for mowing and planting and doing the majority of the work in roadsides, including this 80 acres. And especially now that we're turning all the soil over in Story County, I do have that Batwing you might ask a question about coming up through the LRTF grant. That's going to be pulled behind this with the necessary horsepower to do some mowing. So when the calls start coming in July, when our horse weeds are up over our head, we can get out there and mow this stuff. And we don't have any other unit in the county system right now open that will hook onto this mower and get it done. I can't run it with my Masseys.
Yeah, the tractor to me, I mean, this is something you talked about the last 2 years.
Yes.
That was coming. It was something you're going to need. The Batwing mower, I need you to make the case for me that that's something we really need rather than, because I view it as an attachment to this new tractor.
I did price the tractor out without a loader. It does have loader brackets on it, by the way. I'm not answering your question on the mower, but
yep.
I just want to throw that out. I would anticipate that I would budget for the loader next year. It's another $6,000, but it does have a loader brackets just to keep the pot a little sweeter. The mower is a half bat wing. It's a special roadside mower, one behind you and one on the side. So when you do get in the roadsides, you can mow both sides effectively, and that is necessary. We're doing a lot more mowing. In the concept of IRVM, we quit mowing. You know, it's like, let it all grow. Well, now we hired brush contractors. Okay, so there's areas where in our wider right-of-ways, especially like R38, our new roadsides, we can get in there and mow these things, not every year, not just because we want to, not for aesthetics, but to manage the vegetation, especially with prairie plantings and other plantings where we're digging out, Rick, if we don't mow these things, like your yard, the seed doesn't get established. So what we do every year is we try to, with our computer, you know, GPS to everything, GIS, we know where we need to mow. We print out a map. We send out a guy on a mower. What we've used before is our boom mower with that behind it. And it's a slow-going process. That thing does not break any land speed records. And so the best option for us was to get a tractor that would fit this mower, a mower that fit the tractor, and get the job done. With all the 80 acres, you know, that each roadside is one size about 3 acres per mile. So 6 acres, centerline mile, divide into 80, do the calculations, 15 or so miles of roadside to mow. It takes a while to do it. And
you're taking care of 9,000 of the 14,000 for the Batwing through a roadway trust?
Correct. So we need to come up with another. If we go with this, if the board would go with the recommendation, I think there's another four, six in the middle, five.
Mike, what's your assessment of all this?
I'm never a proponent, really, of adding necessarily equipment. And I'm always a proponent of getting as much life out of the equipment as possible. I think that the boom mower that we have isn't sized right for the tractor that's operating it. For one, and so we've had lots of issues with that, blown tires and bent rims and you name it, because it's not, it's putting too much weight on one side. And that becomes a safety problem. So I get concerned about that. I think that this Batwing is going to be much more efficient at getting the job done, and it eliminates that other concern, i.e. safety, and it's not as efficient. It takes a lot longer to mow with that boom mower than it does with a Batwing. You know, and luckily, we were already able to get the $14,000 in grant funding for it. So it really comes down to a $5,000 outlay to address the lack of efficiency and that sizing issue and safety concern for $5,000. Now.
What, 68? Because it's 63 plus the
63 plus
tractor.
Right.
And, you know, the tractor, yeah, maybe we could get a smaller sized unit to do some of the other things. But again, when you look at that, because we need to replace those 77s, spending a lot of money on downtime, mostly downtime. Was really fortunate and able to repair a lot of things himself.
Right.
But we do have a lot of downtime, lost time. And so we know we need to replace a tractor. So, you know, could we do it less expensively than this? Oh, maybe. But I think in the long run, I think this is a wise move for us, that we can get things sized right, we can get them done correctly, and I don't have to worry about some operator out there. And yes, you know, frankly, sometimes I say, Joe, now, are they operating it too fast or operating it the way they wouldn't be, the way they shouldn't be? And you know, sometimes that might happen, but I think in general, I don't have to worry about someone out there that's going to blow a tire and tip a machine over because it's not the right size for that piece of equipment. So in the end, I think this is a better solution.
So, Lisa, just from a funding source, lost funds, nay, countywide services. I know we have to have an department that we look at, so it's either coming out of the conservation RVM engineering, but I'm just looking at the type of work that's being done, which is countywide, and is there any way to justify, you know, looking at a different funding source in this case?
Look at that. Like I told you this morning, we're already negative.
Right. I understand that.
7,000 there. So you can look at it, but if you're going to pay for it out of one or the other, it's already built in at this point.
Right. Right. Okay. That's what I wanted to hear.
I wanted to ask was the combine. I'm showing that it's budgeted for the current year. And you're putting it in next year's too. How many times are you going to buy that?
Well, I didn't get it done this year.
So I'm going to reestimate your current equipment down by what you say, 800 and 1,000.
Unless I find one. I mean, it's tough to find the right combine. I mean, these things aren't, you just got to look and look and look. And,
well, and that's fine, Joe. What I'm saying is, we're not going to spend it both years, so
right, one or the other.
This year, then I'm going to move it to next year.
Lisa, thank you. Yes, that's exactly what's going to happen. The last one I looked at had a cracked head gasket, blown head gasket, so we decided, But anyway, one more thing about this tractor: the boom mower was purchased to mow from the top of the roadside and reach down. What has happened, we've been forced to go in to the roadsides with that thing, and that is when we start bending rims and blowing tires. So we need that's why I budgeted for something that would go inside.
How many blown tires and bent rims does it take to come up to the $5,000? Not very many.
Yep.
Yeah, real quick. Yeah, we're there.
Let's pull the combine out for next year's budget. If you don't get it bought yet this year, we'll know that we didn't, and we'll deal with that during the year next year.
All
Where's the one app that you looked at?
Where? No.
Got one.
Well, I'm looking at more of a
Berry Hall
Colonel, self-propelled, newer. I mean, I'm upgrading to the mullet era.
Got one like you're using now, sitting up just right south of the Murphy Cemetery.
Yeah, oh yeah, he wanted to sell that for $2,000, including the bullet holes.
Gives a character.
Yeah. We tried, I tell you. We always want to say, being conservation, we want to be as cost-effective as we ultimately can, as energy-efficient as we ultimately can as well. Harvesting prairie seed ourselves certainly goes a long ways toward that. But when we try to do it with the equipment that we have, what are the years on our combines?
They're old.
60s?
Yeah. I mean...
And we realize, you know, hey, we're trying to do it for $1,800, but trying to find a self-propelled combine that you're not going to sink more money into for that amount of money is hard. Is
yeah.
The one thing I would ask maybe you do is go talk to Kevin Cooper here in Nevada.
Cooper has a 5500 John Deere and...
3300.
That's what I meant. That's the perfect combine, by the way. So you guys are out riding around. The 3300 is what I'm looking for. With a bean head.
Donated to him. And I don't know if there's something you can work out with him. I think he wants to keep it because his class, they get a small amount of farm ground that somebody lets them, you know, plant crops on, and they sell that for money for their projects.
Sure, but how many times a year is he going to need to
come? I don't know if there's
maybe you can work out a deal where we buy it from him and he gets to use it.
We talk a lot. We're pretty good buddies, and actually the combine's parked right next to Grant Ridge in a shed on S-14.
See if you can get that put together.
Yeah. He's good at, it was donated to him. He gets stuff donated to him all the time like that so the class can repair it and sell it for money.
And Mark Lee's kid worked on it, put it back together.
Yeah. All right, so we're going to do a callback on this one, but as you walk out of here, there's nobody who's walked out of here with a $100,000 increase on their budget. Just so that we're all clear on how we're looking at that, that's based on the $50,000 increase that you're getting in revenues. With 62, you got the 62 less what you were bringing in this year, but roughly 50 there, and then another 63, maybe 68, depending on how you count it, in an equipment purchase that we've known we had to make for a long time. So don't let anybody start talking about how, oh my God, Quaker got out of there with $100,000.
But Rick, most people talk about Quaker needs some more money. I mean, Bill Cowles the other day said to me, I don't know whether to laugh or cry when I see you drive that 95 Ford pickup in, you know.
You ought to get the facilities truck.
All about getting the job done.
That's what I'm talking about, right?
I've always figured it was a statement truck by you. I thought you liked driving it just to make your statement.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely. All right, you'll schedule the call back? So nothing done on this one, just some things in pencil so far. All right, adjourned. Thank you.
Thanks.